You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thank you for having me.
Copper tariffs went into effect in the U.S., but just on processed raw copper, but copper products like copper wire, copper tubing will be hit with a 50% tariff. And how did the market on copper react to that?
Well, the copper stocks bounced a little bit. They were initially down, but, you know, technically they hit a support level that I was looking at the chart. So whether it continues or just a little temporary rally, but in theory, you know, a tariff like this is good for, you know, copper companies, you know, particularly ones that produce here in the U.S., because that means their product is going to be more in demand. So there's a subtlety about the different types of copper products and so forth. But, you know, basically the stocks popped today, so I'm happy about that. And I was bullish on copper anyway. Freeport was one of our favorite stocks. So we'll see. You know, there could be a little bounce and maybe back down again with the uncertainty, but it should be bullish for the U.S. copper stocks. Just like you know, the tariff on steel, you know, helped Nucor Steel and Cleveland-Cliff Steel. And, you know, I guess prior to that, U.S. Steel was going up before they got taken over. So it helps the domestic companies here. So we'll see how it all plays out. But I know Trump's trying to protect the industries here in the U.S. as best he can, I suppose. That's one of the tools he uses.
Yeah, now, apparently, Canada sends the copper that it mines to China to be smelted because there aren't a lot of smelters. Canada's only got one. The U.S. has maybe two or three. China's got all the smelters, so takes a while to build one, I would think.
You know, the lead time for a lot of these facilities, I know nuclear is many years. I don't know what it is for a copper smelter, but yeah, you know, you have the pollution issues and so forth. You know, China has less concern for that, as we know, and at least they say they are concerned. But you know, they've been, if you visited China in recent years, you can experience some of the pollution there. So some of it tends to be nasty. So you know, it makes more sense there'd be more smelters in China.
How's gold doing?
Well, it's pulling back, and I cautioned a little bit about that. The U.S. dollar index has been rallying the last few days, and that's putting pressure on the metals. You know, they don't always work inversely. You know, there are times where they track together, and this is what you got to be careful about. But my feeling was, you know, gold was extended. Everybody is super bullish on it. We've had a huge move. The charts were saying there were some pullback numbers, you know, potentially well below the market, and doesn't mean it's going to happen. And then the dollar starts to pop here, and then we're starting to see the shares, you know, pop off to the downside. You know, I sort of warned in my newsletter, you know, to clients to be careful here, because even though it might be a short-term effect, you don't know how nasty it could get, you know, over the short term. And, you know, certainly gold, you know, has rallied substantially, and, you know, with a top near 3,500, you know, how much of a correction could you get? You know, $200, $300, $400 maybe, anywhere in there is possible. So we're pulling back a little bit, but the fundamentals for the gold, particularly with the connection to the cryptos and to the treasury bonds and all the things that are being planned by the treasury and, I don't know if the Federal Reserve's involved, but probably so here in the U.S., I guess you got to maintain an overall bullish posture. It depends, you know, obviously if you're trading or investing, but on a short-term basis, the trading stuff is a little negative.
The Fed has kept U.S. Interest rates the same. Is that good or bad news?
You know, the street wants to see lower rates, but the bond market doesn't. You know, it's like if Fed was Powell was fired, but there was talk of this going back the last week or so, if you recall. The bond market, I'm talking about the Treasury bonds, the long-term bonds, sold off on that story, which means long-term rates went up. So the bond market is not too happy about, you know, Powell being fired or rates suddenly being dramatically brought down, which is what the U.S. administration, Donald Trump and others would like to see. You know, I have a lot of issues with the Fed in and of itself in terms of its very existence, you know, for many, many years. There's so many aspects we can spend hours, you know, talking about it. You know, the bottom line is you got to watch long-term bonds and the tail wags the dog, so to speak. And, yes, the Fed's been mismanaged for so many decades and under Powell in particular. But there's so many other aspects to the Federal Reserve, you know, besides the fact they're renovating their building, which was a bit of a story you probably saw last week, that they went over budget and, you know, really extraordinary amount of expense at the tax, you know, at taxpayers' cost to fix the, you know, building and renovate it. But, you know, their control of the money supply. You really need an audit of what the Fed does secretly. It does a lot of stuff. And, you know, the entire discussion is about the Fed funds rate. If the Fed lowering rates or raising rates, we don't talk about all the other secret stuff they do. And there's a lot of secret stuff. And we need an audit. You know, we learned under the Freedom of Information Act a few years ago that the Fed was investing in U.S. companies and bonds secretly. I think one company was mentioned, Harley Davidson, the motorcycle company, you know, so what the hell was the Fed doing that? You know what I mean? You know, they can argue they're trying to prevent some type of crisis in the motorcycle industry, I suppose. I don't know, but a lot of shenanigans going on. They control the M2 money supply, which from the reading that I see and the numbers that are coming out has not been going down. In other words, if the money supply has been contracting, which the Fed controls, that would be real negative for the economy. There's less money floating around, but they seem to be on a steady keel of keeping it up or slightly higher. So, and I suppose they get even more aggressive if there was some type of international crisis or a COVID-type event, you know, a black swan event or some other event. But they do a lot of stuff out there. They repurchase agreements with the banks. And one thing I do want to mention, it was brought to my attention by another analyst, but you know, the real problem, you know, people complain, well, interest rates are up and mortgages are high, at least here in the U.S., and when you think about it, it's really the fault of the banks. The banks are borrowing money around 4%, but they're charging, you name it, on mortgages and, of course, you know, on credit card debt. A number is extremely higher than that. They're working on a huge spread. And, you know, it's interference into free enterprise, but I think clamps have to be put on the banks. If they're borrowing at 4%, why do they have to sell mortgages at 7 or 8%? Why not 2%? 1%. So it's the banks that are making mortgages unaffordable and lending unaffordable because of the spread that they demand, you know, for the return of their capital. And I think something needs to be looked into. You know, I think this is a big issue. But we don't talk about the banks. You know, we look at Jamie Dimon and J.P. Morgan and how well run the bank is, which is the biggest bank, and how they're making money and their stock is up and so forth and so on, but we don't criticize their lending practices and, you know, their ability, you know, to multiply, lend money above what, deposits they have with the Fed. And, you know, it's like 8 or 9 times they can lend out whatever money they borrow from the Fed. You know, the leverage is incredible for the banking industry. So, you know, I think, we need to audit the Fed. We might have to do something with the U.S. banks as well. So it's a multi-pronged problem, you know. And I guess historically you can say, well, 6, 7, 8% for a mortgage here in the U.S. sounds high. But I remember back in 1980, you know, the mortgages were 11, 12, 15% for mortgages going way back. So there are times where the rates have been much, much higher. So historically, it seems high to us because we were at that 0 or 1 or 2%. But going back, you know, multi-decades, It really isn't. But in terms of the current economic situation and the political situation, I think we've got to reel in the banks a little bit until the Fed does something with the short-term rates. Now, remember, the short-term rates really don't control the mortgage rate. It's the long-term bond. So if the Fed starts lowering interest rates, you know, 0.25%, 0.5%, everybody gets all excited, and the stock market may or may go up or probably go up. But that doesn't necessarily affect the bond market or the mortgage rates. It's a very complicated situation because you have a lot of players involved here. So it's not the answer. You know, the real answer is, how's the economy doing? Is business doing well? If business is doing well, it could afford to pay higher rates, even though we don't like to see it. And, you know, the anticipation of that is creating some interest in the building industry and the housing stocks, thinking that the Fed lowers rates. But again, it's a psychological thing. Unless the bond market cooperates, it doesn't mean now all the rates are going to come down. So, it's like I say, it's a very complicated situation. You got a lot of factors here, including the bond market. So we'll see how it all plays out, Jim. So I'm a little long-winded, but it's like everybody's looking at Powell this week, and we know he's going to be replaced. You know, he's a lame duck. And the question is, you know, Mohamed El-Erian, one of the leading economists, very famous, came out with a statement about a week or 10 days ago. I may have mentioned this last week. Thought it was good for Powell to step down. And the reason he said that was because, you know, he said, you know, all this controversy around the Fed and rates and Powell, the fact he may not be around next year, is sort of threatening the institution itself. And he was concerned, you know, I'm not concerned. As far as I'm concerned, the U.S. Congress could abolish the Federal Reserve much as it created it back in 1913. I'd be happy about that. But I think we need free markets deciding that, not a central bank. And then the majority out there disagree with me, but they so mismanage things, I think they need to be removed, honestly. So, but anyway, his statement was, you know, he should step down just to, you know, lighten up the conflict that's going on right now, because we know he's going. We know the next Fed chairman's going to lower rates unless there's some other dramatic event where he can't do it. And, you know, there has been talk in Congress for the last couple of years about revisiting the Fed and the original legislation. And eventually it may go. You know, it's like anything else. It may go the way of the dodo at some point. I mean, it's made so many mistakes. The people in charge, the economists that run it, are really bad. And it's about the worst forecast you can get for the economy and the market comes from economists. So it's interesting times for the Fed now. So now we're going to have to wait till September to see what the Fed does. And everybody's going to be talking about that. So anyway, that's sort of the Fed story.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's going on in the crude market? Is it flat?
You know, it's still bullish overall. And I'm still a bull, but, you know, we're in this time frame for a pullback. You know, we have, remember how September, October have historically sometimes created big sell-offs. There's some cycle work that says beginning, it could begin right now. In fact, we had end-of-the-month window dressing ending today, and I guess you could say it was yesterday as well. That's where money managers, you know, come in and supposedly doctor up their portfolios, to make them look interesting to their clients at the end of the quarter or the end of the month. And like one particular stock has been hot here the last few days, GE Nova, which is the one that's producing the nuclear power plants and so forth. And the stock exploded, you know, it was a $300 stock and now it's a $650 stock and had a big run and was up 80 points one day a few days ago. But anyway, the point is, it's a popular stock, and it's been holding up here and doing well the last few days. Why? Because big name like that, it has to be in within every money manager, any respectable money manager's portfolio. Otherwise, the question is, why aren't you in the leading nuclear stock on the planet run by the biggest company in that business? So that is one extreme example. But you get this end-of-the-month window dressing we just ended, and that applies to every stock, not just the GE stock that I'm referring to. So, you know, we have a bit of an orgasm here, so to speak, in the market, and it may be due for a little bit of a pullback. You know, there is a lot of stock buybacks that occur starting August 1st, too, so that could be an offset, you know, a bullish offset to the negative that I just mentioned. But we are overall, you know, really up there. We made a huge move from the April lows, and the chart still is an overall bullish chart. But, you know, a nice shakeout, you know, would make sense. We'll see if it unfolds. I wouldn't go out there and liquidate your whole portfolio, but if you're more sensitive to the market, you might want to wait a little bit and see what type of correction. And historically, we do get some type of correction here, and then you know, if you have to follow the playbook, you know, you'd be a buyer in September, let's say, and for a year-end rally. So a lot of this is contrary opinion as well. You know, too many people start saying it won't happen, or, you know, you got to watch all the news and so forth. But the cycles and the charts sort of say, you know, we're up there a little bit. And, you know, might be a little extra careful here, just as you are in the gold market that we mentioned a few moments ago, because of the strength in the U.S. dollar. A lot of cross currents, a lot of things happening here, and just a good time frame to maybe lay back a little bit and watch.
What's going on the cryptocurrency front?
Same thing. They're not correcting substantially. They're just churning back and forth. You know, you look at Bitcoin, you know, it's trading between 117,000 and 119,000 for days, and it has some support way under the market around 110,000. And I would be concerned if it took out 100. I don't think it's going to do that. And of course, I'm just giving you one example with the Bitcoin, but it's a similar situation. It's had a big run. And, you know, August is a good time to take a vacation, maybe for the markets and for Bitcoin as well here. So good long-term hold if you're in it. But, you know, the charts sort of say it could correct more here a little bit. So I would, you know, unless you're dollar cost averaging and you have a fixed amount every month and you don't pay attention to the price, but if you are paying attention, there's a chance you might be able to do a little bit better here. So I'm still a bull. I have my VR blockchain letter. We're loaded up to the gills in, you know, cryptos and various names, taking a bigger picture view. And a lot of this, you know, could take months or through the course of this next 12 months or year to really unfold. There's a lot of stuff that has to be worked out. A lot of things being talked about. You know, treasuries and crypto and the connection with gold and, you know, it's an amazing scenario of a lot of things that are flying around here. So, it's a sector you got to be in. And, like I say, dollar cost averaging is not a bad idea because, you can't pick the bottom or the top at any particular moment. But if you think the trend's up, which I think it is, based on all the research that I do and good contacts in the industry that give me their opinion and what the charts are saying, it makes sense that there's more coming to the upside. And, you know, most people aren't in this market. You know, a lot of talk about it, a lot of press, but the average person isn't. But the average person may become more familiar with this now with the passage of the Stablecoin Act, the Genius Act. Because now you're having, as we discussed before, companies, and I guess the most recent glaring example was Walmart creating its own stable coin, which means it's tied to a fixed, like to the treasuries or to the bonds or to the U.S. dollar in a way that it can't fluctuate in value. And, that all has to be worked out. So there may, you may actually be transacting business with stable coins instead of a checkbook or a credit card or cash at some point with a lot of the major, you know, retailers and companies around the world. So I think that's going to orient people a little bit more to the digital currency world, which is unfolding. It's like, you know, when the internet came along, you know, in the 90s, you know, it takes time for people to adjust to it. So this is not all happening overnight, but it's slowly moving in that direction.
And the White House is about to get bigger. President Trump announcing a $200 million state ballroom will be added to the East Wing. That's 90,000 square feet, room for about 650 people. The project to be finished by the end of his term.
Well, the Federal Reserve can spend, I think, several billion dollars to renovate and expand their operation. Certainly the White House can do that, so I'm all for that.
Well, it says it's going to be paid for by donations from President Trump and other people. So maybe taxpayers won't be on the hook, but we know how anything involving government can spiral.
Yeah, well, we are with the Fed's expansion, the Reserve, its thing, but that's interesting. I didn't know that with Donald Trump. But,
maybe we'll be invited.
You think so?
To trip the light fantastic, sure.
I mean, I have to buy a new suit to do that one, but I don't think I'm on the list, Jim. But in any event, I know I'm a big admirer of him and what he's done. And by the same token, I don't think I'm on the guest list. But it's interesting times here with the tariff stories every day and, with the economic reports and the talk about interest rates and the market's been climbing, the firm's backing up a little bit to the market. It's been climbing a wall of worry. You know, everybody's nervous about things. And, you know, we have wars going on. We still have war, you know, the Ukraine war and the Putin situation and the Mideast and the involvement of China and the involvement of Korea and all the nonsense and the Iranian negotiations. So there's still a lot of loose cannons out there. And, the European Union is seems to be very warlike. You know, they're talking about conscription to force young men to join their military. Talking about raising a lot of funds for arms, and it seems like they're preparing for a big world war or preparing for some type of war. You can argue that the world war is already underway to a certain degree with what's going on everywhere. But so forgetting the financial markets and everything else, all this is ultimately tied to the geopolitical situation and how this all resolves. And, you know, it doesn't look too good here. I mean, in one sense, the Iranian situation seemed to be under control, but we really don't know if that's the case. And there's still issues with Israel and Gaza and getting the refugees out and deciding what's going to happen to protect Israel in the years ahead, and what's happening with Ukraine and Putin and the European Union backing, you know, a war effort. Like I say, a lot of loose cannons out there, and at any moment, a lot of this, you know, obviously could affect the market. So got to keep your ears and nose to the grindstone. Though you could argue over the decades, it seems like the stock market likes war, and that's a sad statement. But you know, that's been sort of the story of history, particularly with defense contractors and all the military expenditures and so forth. So, but you know, this one could get out of hand. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
Mark, always fun chatting with you.
Same here. Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovitt, editor and publisher of the Leibovitt VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.